Now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's time for the only area radio show devoted exclusively to football. That is to say, soccer.
Local MLS, Premier League, and international.
It's Blokes on the Bench, and you can reach us at 434-284-9470 or at facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Now here's your host, Andy Richardson.
All right, guys, welcome along to another edition of Blokes on the Bench.
You're listening to Blokes on the Bench on 94.7.
There you go. That was a bit of a mess up.
834-9470.
All right, we'll let that one play out.
Blokes on the Bench, back after this timeout.
Yeah, that was a very quick timeout. And start. There you go. All right, so another week on. Let's start where I know you look disappointed, Ryan. In the studio, we're kind of streamlined today. It's just myself, Ryan, and Mark. Alex is out for a few weeks.
I have a feeling I'm going to get a lot of attention today.
Yeah, so we'll breeze over the first one. United at home to Bournemouth, 1-1. United played pretty decent in the first half. Had a bunch of chances. Seems to be the case at the moment with some of these, bottom of the half teams when they come to Old Trafford. Their goalkeeper seems to have an absolute stormer, and nothing was different in this game. Boric was brilliant, by far the man of the match. So you had Rojo, tidy little finish off a Valencia shot in the 23rd. And then Phil Jones bringing down, I think he actually brought down Joshua King, wasn't it? And King steps up and really tidy penalty pass, high and just over De Gea. And then kind of the nonsense started. So we had...
Yeah, it was UFC it was.
So we had Mings going in on a crunching tackle on Rooney on the edge of the box. Zlatan jumps over him, has a little stab at him, goes to the ground. Mings looks at Zlatan lying on the ground, looks to try and jump over him, turns his head away, stamps on Ibrahimovic's head. I think the ball, maybe about 2 minutes later, I think goes out for a corner. Corner swung in, and Zlatan absolutely elbows him. Just the most blatant elbow. It's not a jump to like gain leverage. It's an elbow. And Mings goes down. And then what happened was Sermon, who'd been booked for a tackle, which actually was a really good tackle on, it was a strong, firm tackle on Luke Shaw, probably in about the 20th minute or something, got a yellow card, and then obviously pushes Zlatan after he's seen him elbow his teammate. And then get shown a second yellow. And Zlatan had already been booked before that. So I think everyone expected him to get his marching orders, but didn't. And stayed on the pitch and ultimately missed the penalty in the 78th minute, was it? Something like that. Ended up being 1-1. Pogba had a bunch of chances towards the end there. We just steamrolling the goal, and we just, their keeper was in. It's just one of those days, and we've had that three or four times at Old Trafford this year where a keeper turns up and we just cannot stick the ball past.
What was Jones up to? Like, honestly, lunging tackle, giveaway, just a silly penalty.
Yeah, I mean, they happen, though. You make a decision, and I'd much rather him make the decision and commit to it rather
mess
than,
up and...
than kind of not make a decision, have the guy get round him, sling it in across the six-yard box and
potential
score.
Ball.
That's way more frustrating rather than, okay, he made a decision, he got it wrong, it's a penalty thing. But right. Bournemouth, fair play to him. Played 45 minutes plus 5 minutes stoppage time with 10 men. Come away from Old Trafford with a draw.
So do you think that Zlatan will get a three-man match if the FA look at it?
I think both Mings and Zlatan run the risk of getting...
But I mean, if you look at Ming's tackle when he comes in and gets him in the back of the head, I've seen a few pundits and commentators say that the first time they saw it was like, oh yeah, that's nasty. But then when they look over it again, it's like, okay, that could just be a genuine mistake.
No.
You think that was a real kind of attack?
You know exactly where you're planting your feet. I know he's looking at Zlatan and then he looks for the ball and makes his jump. There is so much more area that he could plant that foot rather on the back of somebody's head. He's made it look like an accident. I mean, he's played it perfectly. Let's be honest. Yeah, he's looked away just before. And then he's gone for his jump and he's ran the studs down the back of Ibrahimovic's ear. he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows you know exactly where your foot's going to land. And you know what? If it was an accident and that's not in his game, if you know and you turn around, you feel that connection and you've just studded someone in the back of the head, you just stop. It's much more important to see if that guy's all right, that you've just clocked your metal cap studs in the back of his head, rather than getting your position. So for me, I think he's tried to sail us down the river on that one, but we'll wait and see.
What do you think, Mark? I mean, Zlatan is known for this. This is not out of
character. Of course he is. Everyone knows that. Well, in the first 3 minutes, he picks... This is his trademark, okay? He'll stand behind the central defender. He'll put both his hands under the person's armpit, and he'll literally throw him about 10 feet to the left. And that's what he did in the first 3 minutes. He picks the kid up, and he throws him to the ground as if to say, I'm Zlatan.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I don't know much to say about it. I mean, I know that I think I saw that they were going to wait. I think it was the ref was Kevin Friend, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they were going to wait for a report from him to further investigate the incident. But I will say that a lot of times in these situations, you know, the players get caught and sometimes the fines are, you know,
the only
worse than they would have been had, you know, they had just gotten a red card, you know, or two yellows. And I thought it was funny this week in Spain when, I don't know if you guys saw it, but Gareth Bale got two yellow cards within like 15 seconds of one another.
Right,
got himself sent off.
Yeah. Just back from injury as well.
Yeah, exactly. So,
like, there's that. The only thing that I think could be really strange about this one is if the referee documents in his report that he saw the Ibrahimovic challenge and deemed it as a leverage, jumping for leverage.
And that all
there's
kind
no,
of...
He can't have any retrospective action against that. If it's noted in the thing, the one thing that won't be noted, because he obviously didn't see it, is the stamp on the back of his of Ibrahimovic's head.
Mm.
So if it's... I'm look, they're the only two at the back post when the corner comes in. He must see it. He must see the jump and the leverage... Because then he sends and he's straight over to the situation because Sermon, as soon as Ibrahimovic gets up, Sermon pushes him and then he gets his second yellow. So it'd be interesting. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. All right, guys, don't forget you're tuning in here to Blokes on the Bench here, 94.7 WPBC. You can get in contact with us, 434-284-9470, or on Facebook, facebook.com/blokesonthebench. And if you see a little ad from us, our little posts, you can leave a comment underneath them and we'll read them out during the show if you want to give a shout out. Anything else you have on the United game?
I mean, it was enough, mate.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. The Hawthorns, West Brom versus Crystal Palace, and we had talked about this before we were in the drive, and you were saying how disappointed you were with West Brom.
The one team I was really disappointed with this weekend was West Brom. They've been playing so well, and especially at home against the struggling Palace side. West Brom really didn't do enough. There was no real urgency in the final third. Put your hands up. The two goals Palace scored were really well taken. That Zaha finish,
Townsend
rocket, and Andros Townsend with a couple of what we call lollipops, and boom, straight past.
What is a lollipop for our American listeners?
You can call it a standard step over. You're dribbling with a ball and you give them the old faint step over. But if you throw in two of them, we tend to call that a lollipop.
Now, is that with like one foot and then the other foot?
Yeah. Little lollipop round the corner, boom.
Used to do that all the time. I mean, used to nickname me Giggsy at school because I was terrible at it, but, like, you know. Anyway, so do you think that Big Sam has turned Crystal Palace around, or is it too early to tell?
Too early. They're still down there, aren't they?
They are.
Result. Don't get me wrong. It's a great result away at a tough outfit this year, West Brom. Really value for money, West Brom. But yesterday, poor. Really poor. And they'll be the first to admit that. They didn't do enough.
I mean, so what do you think, like... If Palace goes down, you know, Big Sam is always known as being this manager that can keep a club up. But is he going to be necessarily a manager like, for instance, this season? You know, you have Newcastle going down last year. Benitez coming. It looks like they're coming back up.
Yeah.
Do you see the same qualities in a manager like Big Sam?
You cannot put Big Sam... and Rafa Benitez in the same breath. Yeah, that Benitez has won pretty much everything, right? European Cup with Liverpool. He won the Premier League with Chelsea. That's all.
He also won the UEFA League with Valencia before he went to Liverpool.
So he's been around the block, and I actually think Benitez is a good manager. He knows his football. For me, Allardyce's teams, they all set up kind of the same. You have to look at, for me, Andros Townsend is probably their most consistent attacking player. If he played him all the time. But when he first got there, he said that he put him up for sale in January because he didn't feel like he fit into his system. I'm like, what are you on about? He's probably your best attacking option. So I thought he was great at Spurs. He had a great season that one year. Was brilliant for England when he played in the qualifiers leading up to the Euros. Everyone was talking about Townsend in the UK. Everybody. He was brilliant. And then his career has taken a little bit of a dip. And now he's at Palace, but like I said, pulled off the old lollipop today and rattled one out.
All right. Well, there you go. So Watford versus Southampton. There's a lot of games this week that were high-scoring games.
Yeah, it was a good game, this one.
Yeah, Deeney on the good old score sheet.
Fantastic finish, that Deeney one. That is such a difficult technique. Hip height, left-footed volley, absolutely rifled it in after 4 minutes. And then you have Dusan Tadic. Score, really well worked goal. And then Nathan Redmond scored to make it 2-1.
Gabby Adini, what a signing he's been.
Okaka scored just before the 80th minute, I think it was, to make it 2-2. And I thought, we're really set up for an entertaining last 10 minutes where I thought one goal's going to win it. And we ended up having three goals in the last 10 minutes. So Gabby Adini back on the score sheet again.
Do you think he'll be the best signing for Southampton this year?
Absolutely, he already is, yeah. But the Gabby Adini goal, question marks over Gomez. A really poor goalkeeping. And he played really well in that game. Didn't really have much chance with the two first Southampton goals. But he's just absolutely spilled, bread and butter kind of cross into the box. And Gabby Adini was there to poke it home, 3-2. And then Redmond with a tidy finish in the 86th minute. And then they had I can't remember who scored there. I can't remember who scored. But I know Watford scored again in, 4th minute of stoppage time.
Right.
Really good game. 4-3 Southampton. That's a great result away from home. Entertaining as well. And the funny thing about this game is that even though there were 7 goals scored, the only real mistake that was made was Gomez on the third goal. The rest of them were really well worked team goals. Defense, you could probably pick, in phase one of a certain play that something could have been done, but it wasn't stand out the last phase of a play that a defense could have done something to stop it. Really good goals, really well worked team goals. So yeah, it was a cracking game, but it wasn't actually my favorite game of the weekend, so we'll probably come into that. This was absolutely the best game of the weekend.
Swansea versus Burnley at the Liberty Stadium.
Swansea versus Burnley. Little thing for you, Burnley away from home this year have racked up a whopping 2 points away from home this year. They've had 2 draws this year, and it didn't start very well for them in this game. You had Mawson hit the post with a header, bounces back to him. He smashes it against the crossbar. Same guy in the space of about 3 seconds. And then Llorente gets on the score sheet. Really great goal.
Olsen's goals.
Great movement.
I really liked that one.
Yeah, and 12th minute. And then Gray with a penalty. Really strange. If you want to see a really bizarre decision this weekend, this is the one to look at. So Sam Vokes jumps in the air, punches it. He's a Burnley forward, by the way. Punches it, and Burnley get the penalty for handball because the ref thought it was a Swansea player. So Damari Gray dispatched that really nice. One thing about the referee, I can't remember exactly who it was. The young, bold guy. I can never remember what his name is.
So the one looks like Jasper
Carr? Apparently it was his stag do this weekend. So everyone was joking about that. Maybe he's still got a bit of blurry vision from Friday night. But Yeah, you know, in the end, it didn't pay dividends, even though Gray, with a fantastic finish, to take Burnley 2-1 up in the 61st, spin turned, rifles it in the back of the net. Keeper had absolutely no chance, old Flapianski. And then Olsen, yeah, we were talking about the Olsen goal. Great goal. Little back heel from Sigurdsson. And he still had a lot to do, Olsen, but just absolutely rifles it in the corner for 2-2. And then that man, 92nd minute.
We're on to
perfect cross. And Llorente with a winner. And thoroughly deserved, Swansea. They've been absolutely brilliant. And one thing I want to say about this as well, you know, if drawing the whole before Bob Bradley, drawing Bob Bradley reign, they were, I think, everybody's pick, especially from the blokes on the bench,
to go down.
But for them to go up in this game, then be 2-1 down with half an hour to go, and have the mentality to turn that around and win 3-2, that's massive. And that's massive testament to Paul Clement and what he's done with that team. And like I said, the dodgy penalty decision thoroughly deserved the win. So fair play to them. 3-2 in the end. Brilliant. Great game.
All right. Stoke versus Middlesbrough. Stoke kind of pulled this one out, I thought.
Middlesbrough shocking, mate.
Well,
shocking. Absolutely.
I thought both goals were brilliant goals.
Oh, Arnautovic is on fire again.
He could be the saviour of this club if he can...
You know, he was a bit...
I don't think he'll be there next year.
No, I don't think so. I was kind of surprised he stayed there this year, but brilliant. Two great finishes. I mean, his touch in the box is brilliant.
You guys are going to buy him when you don't get Griezmann.
We're getting Griezmann.
The thing is, with Arnautovic, he'll give you a world-class performance, and you just think, this guy is brilliant. And then you don't really see him for two or three games.
Yeah.
So it's like...
It's not like he goes missing for like 20 or 30 minutes in a game. He goes missing for like a couple games.
But then you think about... I feel like someone like Arnautovic is probably at the right club. Like, I don't know where he goes from Stoke. I don't see like a Liverpool or like an Arsenal or, you know, throw Tottenham in there. I don't even see him going to somewhere like Everton.
He's kind of a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah,
but where's the next pond? Like,
you don't think someone like Everton might not take him?
Well, Everton might take him, but I don't think Everton's style of play would suit him. The kind of player that he is.
And I don't think Everton's that much bigger than a club like Stoke.
Yeah, what about Sunderland?
They're maybe a step ahead. If you're going on, let's say, a 20-point scale, they're probably like 1 point ahead.
Yeah.
But they're not much further than that.
That's like going from like a 4-star restaurant to a 3-star restaurant. Yeah. It's not really a whole lot.
I was going to say Sunderland, but they're not going to.
The thing is with Arnautovic, I think the only thing that might make him move is if one of those similar type clubs that have maybe a little bit more money behind them offer him a better contract, better wage deal.
Or maybe they're playing in Europa League.
Might persuade him. Maybe if they're in London. That seems to be a bit of a draw, so I'm thinking, like, not necessarily the Europa comment you made, but, like a West Ham probably wouldn't be a bad move for somebody like Arnautovic. But, yeah, no, two great goals, and there was such a disciplined performance by Stoke. They were never really under threat, and they just kind of... They kind of walked the last 20 minutes. It's kind of sad to watch, because Middlesbrough... Just doggo, mate.
All right, guys, the time is coming up. The 20 to 6. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. All right, so next game, Leicester versus Hull.
Okay. First thing about this is I want to say the same kind of thing I just said about the Swansea-Burnley game. So, and that game as well was you know, pretty much a six-pointer. Same here. Leicester go 1-0 down. Can't remember who scored, but it was early on, wasn't it, Kulakis, young kid, just back from suspension after 14 minutes. And I was thinking, because I think everyone was talking about, you know, how were Leicester going to back up what they did against Liverpool, which we haven't spoke about yet, but we should get to because they were absolutely brilliant and absolutely tore Liverpool apart. But it was definitely the Leicester of old. And you know what? After they went 1-0 down in this game, it was the Leicester of last year.
Not only that, but Mahrez's goal, which was the second one. Typical Mahrez goal. He just comes in and takes our defenders from the left or the right hand. The right hand side.
A couple lollipops.
Yeah.
Definitely threw in the odd lollipop, didn't he, if it's Mahrez. But one thing that really impressed me in this game is that players that you would look at that have not played well this year, Fuchs, Mahrez, Vardy, were probably their three best players yesterday. Again, against Liverpool, they were as well. Fuchs with a great finish, Vardy with a setup. Vardy was just on the last man constantly harrying
people.
So
do you think Leicester stays up now?
Absolutely. I think you have to.
So what do you think was going on
there? Just a confidence thing. It's a shift in mentality. And this guy, Craig Shakespeare, has been at Leicester for a very long time. I think they all respect him. They want to see this guy do really, really well. They don't want this guy in his first managerial, even though he's interim manager, his first managerial stint, if you like, get relegated from the biggest league in the world. So I think he's pulled the players together. I know they head to Dubai, I think, today for some warm weather training for a week. But Vardy was absolutely... I know he didn't score yesterday, but he was absolutely brilliant. Vardy of old. Just a nightmare for defenders, dragging them out from everywhere. And that's what led to basically... two of the three goals, and then obviously you had Huddleston's own goal in the 90th, which is a little harsh, but yeah, I mean, it has to go down as an OG. But fantastic result from Leicester. That's two on the bounce for Shakespeare and the Leicester boys. Granted, both of them were at home, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, when they're away from home, how they set up and if they have the same kind of drive and determination. Right. But
if they go through and beat Sevilla?
Well, I said this. I said, like, in a way, it's kind of genius timing. Even though I completely disagree with what's happened, it's genius timing because there's no expectation. There was no expectation against Liverpool, and there's no expectation against Sevilla. Look, they only have to nick a 1-0. And I'm telling you right now, if they play like they played against Liverpool and they played in the last 75 minutes of this game, going 1-0 down and coming back, I would not bet against them.
And it's at King Power.
I wouldn't bet them nicking a 1-0. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Sevilla underestimate him a little bit. Because Sevilla absolutely... Look, let's not get this wrong. Sevilla demolished him. The fact that it was finished 2-1, they must be hating it, Sevilla. Because they just ran over him. Schmeichel was brilliant that night. Leicester, literally their one attack, they got a goal. But if Leicester, like I said, if Leicester play like they did against Liverpool, I fancy Leicester to actually turn the screw on Sevilla and get a result.
Because there's only one goal behind, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, if Leicester win 1-0, they're through.
Right.
Because they got that away goal in the first leg. So
I don't think Sevilla will underestimate. I mean, we'll get to Champions League, you know, probably next show.
No, we've got some games coming up this week.
Yeah, I mean, we'll at least like preview some, like as far as results go and more analysis,
especially if some of the ones go the way.
Look forward for that for next show for sure. As far as like breaking the matches down,
actually
Premier League.
I do believe that we have games this week. Champions League. I'll get to them obviously in a bit. But
yeah, Arsenal have a game, but you know it's pretty much intervention 2 weeks ago, scrimmage.
Training exercise, pretty much what they did this weekend.
Oh, is that?
And here we go.
Oh, here we go.
Oh.
There was a training session at Anfield.
Intervention Volume 3, Blokes of the Bench.
It was probably,
everyone against Mark. Here we go.
This was Andrew, the chairman of the Cerdini fan club.
Only in the Premier League would a network televise a training session in front of like 46,000 people at Anfield, because I tell you what, Arsenal were absolute dog, absolute shocking, terrible in every aspect of the pitch. So first of all, genius Wenger decides that he's going to leave
Best player on the bench.
Sanchez on the bench.
So, with Ozil sick as well.
Yeah, Ozil sick. Well, no one cares about him.
You don't care about
him. He's overrated. Right. Yeah. You have Sanchez, who's been involved.
He's got a new autobiography out.
Me and my Boogly Eyes.
Ozil. I'm always offside.
With a bust up, apparently Mourinho called him a coward.
Ooh.
That's being nice. But So they leave. So Sanchez is on the bench. Sanchez has been involved. That means scored or assisted 26 of Arsenal's goals this year. And Arsene Wenger, who's clearly, he's not, surely he's not oblivious to what's going on around him in the media, social media, his fans going on like Arsenal TV, absolutely slating him. And he decides to make the genius decision of giving Welbeck his first start in 10 months, which I'm not against. I think Danny Welbeck is a
Yeah, that should have happened the last four games.
Yeah, that's fine. But you don't sacrifice somebody else. You do not sacrifice Alexis
Your
Sanchez.
Best player.
And then you put Giroud up front with Welbeck off because your claim was you're going to be a little
you
bit more
You wanted two
direct.
Players in the air.
You're going to be a little bit more direct through the middle because you're trying to counteract Liverpool's press. That's genius, Arsene. That's absolutely genius. But you need to inform your players to play direct because when they pass it around in triangles and get hunted down in packs in midfield by a way better midfield... In what Liverpool showed yesterday.
Not only that, but their defense was playing real high, and they just got...
Yeah, but it direct means that you're going to sling some like 40-yard balls up to Giroud, right? Not one. And Arsenal had their first shot on target in the 49th minute. Well, I'll tell you what, Wenger, sign that two-year contract because you've got your tactics absolutely spot on. Absolute disgrace. And I was a little bit on the fence about a month ago with... The Arsenal fans that were coming out calling for it, I was like, come on, you can't really... At the time, I think you guys were third. Now you're in fifth. And you're going to
We
drop...
got a game in hand.
Okay, God. I wouldn't sing and dance about that. If that's what you're going to see, right, I would not sing and dance about that. Shocking. Shocking. So, look, take nothing away from Liverpool. They had something to prove after the Leicester performance where they were absolutely outplayed. In every position in the pitch, and they turned up yesterday for the late kickoff, and they absolutely dominated that game. Welbeck, yeah, had a tidy finish in the 57th minute.
He's a proper footballer, like you've said.
But it could have been, I'm not joking, this game could have been done after like 45 minutes. It should have been like 4-0. Petr Cech had a couple of decent saves. I remember Coutinho missing a chance that, you know, usually I think he would have buried. But the Firmino goal, your defense can't even like hold simple positions, getting dragged all over the place, and then you rely on like Monreal and Bellerin to get up the line and do good work in the final third. They had an off day. I like both of them. I think they're both really good players. They just had an off day in the final third. But defensive wise, where I think Monreal definitely stands out defensively, was shocking. Mustafi just goes wherever the ball goes. He's like a 9-year-old on a school ground. Wherever the ball goes, he wants to run to it. If it's like 10 yards towards the midfield, he wants to run out to it and like play with it. And he just gets knocked. It gets two passes knocked around him, and now he's 15 yards out of position. Shocking, shocking, shocking. And if Petr Cech's got anything about him, he'll go and play for someone like Southampton because. I wouldn't want to stand in front of that defense week in, week out, and just basically get it ripped out of you every single week. So poor. And then you bring Sanchez on. Wow, what a genius managerial move this was to bring Sanchez on. And what does he do? Puts the pass in that gets Welbeck. So that's 27 goals he's been involved in this year. And for that period, that 20-minute period, Arsenal actually... looked like they were doing something. But it's too late. When you're 2-0 down at Anfield at halftime, it's too late. And then you're pressing for that. And right. Adam Lallana, by far, hands down, the best player on the pitch by an absolute country mile. And what he did for that Wijnaldum goal thing is just, you have to break it down. You have to watch it. What he does in midfield to just leave two Arsenal players like, I don't know what they were doing. It's having a picnic, having a chit chat.
I mean, we were pushing for the draw.
Yeah, but that's the Premier League now. Counter attack, and I'll tell you what, Adam Lallana, that was insane, brilliant. So,
you think he could be like in a few years, kind of that next Carrick figure, like he kind of dominates and bosses the
different midfielder. But for me, this year. As England-wise goes, I know like if Alex was here, he'd probably have something to say about this. Dele Alli has been brilliant this year. But you are, this year, even in the poor performances, Adam Lallana is week in, week out, Liverpool's best performer. And that bodes great for, like, England.
Of course. Well, I feel like Lallana is one of those players where, you know, Dele Alli's good on the ball, but the thing that's great about Lallana is that he has that great creative sense in him. You know, he'll stay on the ball, he'll distribute. Dele Alli is okay at that. I feel like Dele Alli is a better finisher, whereas, if I was going to be... It's like a point guard in basketball. Like, yeah. Dele Alli is a shooting guard. Lallana is your point guard.
You give
Lallana the ball. You say, go out there, find the channels, get in the channels, get the ball, send the ball through the channels to your other players. Where Alli is one of those players where he's going to, like, kind of sit off Kane and just, you know, get those, you know, like in basketball, you get picks, you get some open looks. Like, that's Alli. Like, they're both great players.
I'm not going to say that Lallana is a better attacking midfielder than Dele Alli, because that's probably not true. But the reason that I think he's been the best attacking midfielder for English midfielders, that might be confusing, but Dele Alli does all, I'd say all, I'm going to say all, I was going to cut him some slack, but I'm not, does all his best work in the final third and in transition. Adam Lallana has shown week in, week out that he will harry every blade of grass on a football pitch, whether he's defending.
Well, he's a former winger too, you know.
He's doing everything. So as a collective, that's what I'm saying. He's everywhere. He'll become almost a fifth defender. He'll become a holding midfielder, and literally in the blink of an eye, he's then transitioning into that attacking midfield role, and then he's in the box creating or finishing. Like, so for me, Lallana does so much work on a football pitch. His engine is ridiculous. And it hurts me to, like, give so much praise to a Liverpool player, but I actually love Lallana. I loved him when he was at Southampton. I actually thought Man United should have went for him. Top professional, and fair play to him this year. He deserves you know, what he's getting from the game. So fair play. Great result for Liverpool.
All right, moving on to today.
So no comments on Wenger.
Yeah, maybe we should.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, we'll skip this for a bit. We'll get to Alex's favorite team in a little bit.
So, back to the old Wenger out.
I think he has to go.
All right, so some rumors coming in the rumor mill. Let's go through the clickbait.
Alex Sanchez leaving. Is he leaving?
I would say it's very likely that he will leave now.
Even if they get rid of Wenger?
It's funny. Apparently, it seems like Ozil is more into staying if Wenger stays.
Right, that's
whereas,
what I've
like,
heard too.
Sanchez is like, it's not any kind of connection there.
No loyalty. Like, it's all about.
You know, I look at it like, kind of like this with like Alexi not starting on Saturday. I walked into Cardinal Hall, and I was like, "Where's Sanchez?" And then like the camera flashes over, and you know, he's on the bench, and I'm just how is our best player on the bench? Like maybe picks up, like, you know, a knock in training, and like he's fit enough to like be an insurance policy, but it's like, no, it's like Ryan said, he is our best player. He's been involved in, what, 27 goals this year?
Yeah.
You know, moving up front, coming from the wing, and it's like Wenger's whole excuse of like, hey, well, you know, I wanted two good players in the air. Well, that works a lot. Okay, that works a lot better, like, when you have someone, like Ryan said, either play direct, which we didn't actually do.
No.
And we didn't have anybody to hold the ball up. And it's not even like we were like sending long balls to Giroud like to hold up. But Giroud is normally a very good hold up striker. So I knew something had to have been going on. You can clearly show through the last 2 months that Sanchez has shown his frustration in these matches that we have underperformed, lost, drew, whatever, right, you can see it, right?
But my issue is that if you're going to play Giroud up front, yeah, and you're going to lob balls to Giroud, look, I don't care what you say about putting Wow back up there so you got two tall center forwards. That's just an absolute lie, because if you're
it's
a
not
defender,
like we're playing 4-4-2.
If you're
like
a defender and you're picking out a long pass and you've got the choice between hitting it towards Danny Welbeck, who's just drifted out to here, or this person through the middle who's isolated a centre-back, who's Olivier Giroud, who's about 6'5", you're hitting it to Giroud. Why, yeah, if that's the case, if that's your option, why is Danny Welbeck in there? You play Sanchez to get on the flick-ons from Olivier Giroud. The flick downs, the nod downs.
Or to service him into the box.
It doesn't make any sense. And you know what? If he decides that he's dropping Sanchez because something that was said on a training ground or something like that, he should know that the scrutiny that's on him right now.
Then leave him off the squad for the game.
Leave him on the bench. But I would come out and say he's got a little bit of a calf niggle. That's why he's on the thing. Protect yourself a little bit. Look, if he's going to do that and you've had words with him before, because that's what's happened, right? He's probably had words with him before. This isn't the first time. You don't go to your teammates on the training ground, have a bust up in one day, and then get dropped. It's something that develops over things. So Arsene's probably gone to him and goes, hey, you can't do that. If you've got a problem, come speak to me and let me address my players. I guarantee it.
It's starting
like
to
that.
Remind me of the whole Costa Mourinho thing of last season. So, you know, like throwing the training, you know, the thing they would the bib, you know, throwing the bib at Mourinho. Like
it doesn't work like that. It doesn't manifest from just one incident. So he's probably been told. So if you've told that player, hey, Alexi, don't do that. Come to me. I'll address the thing. Yeah. So then he has every, in my opinion, Wenger has every right to drop him to the bench, but he has every right then to protect himself against like the media storm that's around him at the moment, to say, yeah, he's got a little niggle in training, nothing serious, but I'm just trying to protect my player. So yeah, he's only fit enough for 50 minutes or 45 minutes, this thing. And then it's up to Sanchez then to be like, no, that's BS, like, you're lying, I was fit, ready to go. And he's not going to do that. He's not. No player is going to come out and really say
that. I mean,
that.
You could show, you know, Sanchez is one of those players, and this is why we love watching him. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He's the hardest working player at Arsenal, maybe even in the Premier League, as far as, like, you know, going after balls, chasing it, you know. Mm. When he gets subbed, every single time he gets subbed, it's like, why'd you sub me? I want to keep playing. Like, he always wants to play. And it's like, so here's what I want to get at. So with Wenger,
has to go.
Yeah.
He's, you know, I have defended him for a very long time, and now I'm under the, you know, we've got to get rid of him. And here's a stat. In the last 5 years, Arsenal have faced the current Premier League top six 21 times. Winning 3, drawing 6, and losing 12 of those matches. They've scored 26 goals and conceded 47, winning just twice away from home in 13 attempts.
Not good enough. It's not good enough.
I think the stats speak for themselves.
It's not good enough.
So apparently, another clickbait article. Yeah, we're running low on time on this, but this is just what I want to finish with.
We can come back. Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right, guys, the time is 20-7. All right, guys, welcome back. You were in the middle of talking about stats.
Yeah, so, you know, this has been like the last, I want to say it's been the last month. It's really been the last, like,
number of years.
5 years, right, at least, you know, that we've had this conversation, that it's like every year, it's like start of the season. We're a big club. We're always expected to win a title. Now, do we have a realistic shot of winning the title every year? Maybe, maybe not. You know, out of all the clubs in England, you know, out of 20 clubs that fight for it every single year, you know, 3 new ones come up. But at the end of the day, Arsenal's always got to be at the top of that list of like, hey, these guys have won it before. They've got the pedigree. They've got the class. They've got the squad, potentially. You know, like, last year was probably our biggest opportunity to have won the league.
Right.
You know, with the way, you know, Leicester kind of ran away with it. I mean, Tottenham almost won the league.
My thing
last
is,
year,
you have
you
know? To. I think it's now is the perfect time to get rid of him.
Yeah.
Because you bring somebody in, all right, that can have a few months with the team before the end of the season and can actually put his hands in the pockets and actually not be afraid to spend
money. Coming in before the end of the season. That's not going
to
happen.
Well, then he has to be then out before the summer, because the guy has to come in and buy players, because potentially if the money that you guys have in your pockets is...
No. This is their problem, right? Because you spend $45 million on Mesut Ozil, that's a massive statement. And at the time, Ozil was regarded as one of the best midfielders around.
Number 10s in Europe.
Okay, yeah, regarded as. Absolutely, he was not even in my top 100. But what I would say is that's a huge statement, but you've got to back it up. So you can't just buy... Look, this is the thing, you can't just go out and buy one, even two players that will win you a title. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. So you buy Ozil, which is... How long has he been there now? This is third season?
This is fourth season, I
fourth
think.
Season.
We got him in 2013, 2014,
Right? So if I'm those two, I'm looking around going, well, where's the rest of them?
Right.
Because they're probably being told that, hey, we got... This person's in there, and they're seeing Xhaka being bought, Mustafi,
Elneny,
Lopez. Is that his name?
Lucas Perez.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
This isn't
a title winning. These aren't title winning pedigree players that you're buying. I'd be looking around, scratching my head, going,
"We bought a lot of squad players ever since we moved into the new stadium. The focus has been buying squad players, like,
but it's
not. Your Podolskis. Like, yeah, you buy Lucas Podolski like a couple years before we bought him. That might have been like on par with like a Mesut Ozil signing, but like, you know, we end up buying Lucas Podolski when he's like, you know,
30,
teetering on the exactly. And he scored some belters for us. Don't get me wrong,
He's not going to play 50 games a year for you.
No.
I mean, and that's the issue. Wenger has to go, and I think it has to be before the end of the season.
One last question. What about Allegri?
No. Wrong man. No.
So, just a yes or no answer. In or out?
Oh, he's out, but let him have the rest of the season.
Yep.
I think that's what's going to happen.
Out should not get the rest of the season. You need a new manager to come in, see what he's working with right now till the end of the season, because that new manager is probably going to finish in the top four.
All right.
And then he'll be able to see where he needs to strengthen. That's what you need to do.
All right, we have to move on to the games today.
Yeah.
White Hartley and Spurs versus Everton. Spurs showing how dangerous and a Harry Kane.
It's a super lapse.
14 goals, 12 appearances.
It was a weird game.
Lapse of concentration from both sides after in injury time. That was awful.
The second goal was
terrible.
Everton
did nothing for 75 minutes of that game. They were just not at the races. And to be fair, that was the problem. Spurs were like, oh, okay, it's 2-0. 75 minutes, this is going to be an absolute stroll. And then Lukaku gets the goal. And then, you know, then they're trying to shut up shop a little bit. Dele Alli gets the goal. And then,
Valencia. The best goal of the game was Harry Kane's first. Did you see that afterwards he was talking about? He was saying that, like, he was on the practice pitch the day before with Walker and Eriksen taking shots from that range. He thought, why not?
Yeah. Well, fair play. Brilliant.
So,
brilliant.
Former keeper, like, Lee Dixon was all about, he thought that the keeper should have saved that.
Yeah, you have to make an early step.
Yeah.
You have to be on your toes.
So you think the keeper should have saved that? I mean, I feel like that was kind of like, not a bogus statement, but kind of like, it could go both ways.
Look, it is savable if you are 100% engaged. Look, this is the thing. When you're that far out, it's hard to be engaged for a potential shot to come in because it is a ridiculous thing, right? But usually when somebody encroaches past, I was always like, as soon as somebody crosses the 25-yard out line, I'm fully on my toes, engaged, ready to go either side.
Yeah.
And I'm already taking my first step out and across. To where
Cutting
I,
off
where
the
I
angle
think, yeah.
kind of thing, yeah.
And that just didn't happen. Look, turns into a great finish. Yes, you can question mark the goalkeeper, but I think you're stretching at that a little bit. But
well, that's kind of why I texted you guys, and I was like, you know,
it is savable.
It's you know, not the goal of the season. It's definitely a great strike of the season, you know. But when Lee Dixon's sitting there talking like, oh well, you know, like the keeper should have saved it, I was like, yeah, that was a pretty good strike. Like, I mean, I could see a keeper saving it, but I mean,
you should never get beat from that range.
No,
is the I'm saying
consensus
cardinal rule. Little shout out there, but yeah, look, that far out, you shouldn't get beat. You should already be prepared, and that's what they say. You should always be engaged from. I mean, you see players score from like 50 yards, 60 yards, just because they've noticed the keeper's like maybe on their penalty spot, between the penalty spot and the 18 yard box. You kind of fall out of what can happen. So that's what I mean. You have to be switched on for 90 minutes, yeah. 95 minutes. And that, I mean, that's what they get paid for.
All right. Guys, don't forget you're tuning into Blokes on the Bench here at 94.7 WPVC. You can get in contact with us, 434-284-9470. Or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com, Blokes on the Bench. And if you have a question for us, hit us up on our page. We'll read them out. All right, so the next game was Sunderland versus Man City. Defoe... on the 20th minute, really unlucky, with just hit the woodwork.
Yeah.
Could have pretty much, well, I'm almost going to say they're going to win the game, but it was at least
changed the
2-1, you know,
the game a
right.
little bit. But look, Man City, real professional performance, got the goals at like the two perfect times you can score, right before halftime and on the hour mark.
Why is that? I mean, I understand the halftime, because when you come
right
back...
Right before halftime, it deflates the other... especially against...
it changes the halftime talk, you know, a lot
yeah.
of times.
So it changes the halftime talk, because usually, if they'd have gone in 0-0, David Moyes just, boys, just keep doing what you're doing. This is where we can improve a little bit. But when you go in 1-0 down, they have to score now. There's no sitting back and soaking up
right.
this pressure.
I get that. What about the 60th minute? What's
60th
that about?
Minute.
Well, it's normally when you make your first substitution.
Yeah,
right. 2-0
up with 30 minutes to go, you can start really slowing the game down. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's perfect time to score your second.
So what do you think? I mean, Aguero getting on the score sheet again.
Well, that's Aguero. I didn't even... to be honest, I only read over this game, so I didn't see the goals per se, but...
Sané's was awesome.
Yeah.
Really good game.
I mean, fair
really
play. They seem to have, you know, found a little bit of a stride.
Will
right
they
now,
stay so. Top four?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I think you have to give it to them.
And Pep's looking like he's relishing it now.
I think. We'll see. A couple of bad results and he'll be back to thinking that he should be on the golf course 24-7 disappearing. But.
All right, guys. So let's move on to the table. So Chelsea play tomorrow. There's a game on hand. I'm not sure who they play.
West Ham.
West Ham. Yes, that's it. It's West Ham. So that game's tomorrow. But at the minute, as the table stands, and it's not going to move much. I mean, obviously Chelsea aren't going to drop. Chelsea, 63 points. Tottenham on 56. Man City on 55. Liverpool, 52. Arsenal, who are in fifth now, are on 50. Man United.
With the game in hand.
We've got a game in hand as well, Man United. We're still on sixth, 49.
Against City, though.
Well, I think right. we're. I think we're.
Quite,
yeah, I'm not. Yeah, exactly. I'm not really that worried
Can't
about.
Can't beat Bournemouth, but yeah, we're not scared.
Sitting in seven is Everton in 44, West Brom 40, Stoke in 35, and Southampton 33, and then of course the middle, the bottom points. Crystal Palace moved out of the relegation zone. Now you have Middlesbrough sitting on 22 points.
They're gone.
Hull,
they're gone.
21.
They had their
Sunderland
chance.
And 19. Are we looking at now...
So who's the bottom three? Say the bottom three.
Middlesbrough, yeah. Hull, Sunderland. Are I we now looking at... this is the three.
The bottom three, yeah. You look at Leicester aren't going to go back now, I don't think.
Right.
They've turned a corner. Swansea
they're on the ascendancy up.
The only team that I could see falling into there, that three...
Palace.
No. I mean, honestly, on what I'm seeing, Burnley... I don't think their home record will keep them up this year. If they keep playing, it's not good enough. So I could see Burnley dropping in there. Maybe Palace. But then you've got to look at one of those three teams, Middlesbrough, Hull, Sunderland, doing something to get themselves out. And I don't see it.
Yeah. All right, so that's... Well, that's up pretty much the table. Oh. All right, so let's look at the Champions League. See what we have, because we have games this week, and then we have games next week as well. So this week we have Napoli versus Real Madrid on Tuesday, and Arsenal versus Bayern.
Oh, training exercise, yeah. I think they're going to do a lot of six-man defending, I think, was what Arsene was talking for. I think you might even see the rope around the waist so they keep them at least 10 feet apart. That'll be a good idea.
How many goals do the Arsenal have to score to actually win this?
4-0. 4-0 they have to win.
Just remember, we're still playing in Champions League, blokes.
I
got into this argument with Alex a couple weeks ago, and he was trying to talk smack about Tottenham.
Think about this. So you're in the Champions League. Do you think it's doing more for your confidence to be 5-1 down against Bayern Munich or to be Man United in the Europa, who are safely into the quarters?
No, I would agree with you. He was just trying to give me a bunch of lip because Arsenal got smacked by Bayern, and I was like, you lost again.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't talk, they lost in the Europa. Right. Yeah.
And we're talking about two different tiers of competition.
Alex, come on. Like, you know, your boys did pull out the result against Everton today, so...
So, that's Tuesday's games. We also have Wednesday, Barcelona versus Paris. I'll eat my words because I said last time, do Paris have a chance, remember? Yeah. And you were like, of course they do. Because I've underestimated.
And now you should be saying,
well, Cavani's been a goal scoring machine. He's got like a goal a game like this year. Ever since Lahten left, and he's the main man up top.
I really
top,
think
like,
that a few years ago, United should have really went after Cavani.
Yeah, well,
I thought the same thing
of
Arsenal. Like,
it was right at the same time that we actually got Falcao.
Them would have worked really well up front. I think Falcao would have probably gotten half a chance of vice versa.
I think the real players that need to be talked about in that first leg, Rabiot and Verratti in the middle of the park, just shutting down.
Yeah.
Barca's midfield.
Yeah.
Who was it? The name has completely forgotten me. Paris Saint-Germain, they bought somebody over the summer, didn't they? Doing really well. I've completely forgotten.
They bought Draxler.
That's the January
transfer
window.
He's
a player, that boy. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was the summer. Has he been?
No. There were so many years have gone by where, Julian Draxler is going to come to Arsenal.
Yeah.
Never happened. And now he's at PSG. Great player.
Yeah. And then Dortmund versus Benfica.
I think Benfica are one up in that game, right? I still feel like you can't bet against Dortmund, but such a great result for Benfica in the first game, so I don't know. That's all.
Those Portuguese teams are tricky sometimes,
yeah, they
too.
Are.
You can't really kind of gauge them.
Well, they defend very well and can also score against you, so it's how do you line up against them? You know, what's your plan?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's just run through the fixtures. West Ham versus Chelsea tomorrow.
Is it at...
It's West Ham's ground, so it'll be at the London Stadium, I believe.
Short trip for the West Londoners.
I'm going 2-2.
I'm going for riots at the 34th.
You could go with that. I think that'll be a draw.
Because that was the last game, wasn't it? Chelsea versus West Ham. But it was the EFL Cup, I think it was.
Right.
And there was a lot of trouble at the London Stadium. So look out for that, guys.
I'm going for West Ham. If West Ham are going to get a draw, they have to score first. So I'm going 2-2, West Ham to score first. And it'd be a controversial game.
All right. Man City versus Stoke. I mean,
Man City.
There's so many games that are on, like, to be announced at the minute. I don't understand it. What's going on this weekend? Is there more cups?
No, you got FA Cup coming on the...
Oh, so it's the following week, I'm guessing?
On the 12th, because Man United play Chelsea on the Monday. Is it next Monday? It is next Monday. We play Chelsea next Monday. So it's FA Cup weekend, I guess, coming up.
Wow. Because we still have that game in hand with City as well.
Yeah.
But there's loads of games. I mean, there's only like four games on Saturday. Bournemouth versus West Ham again. Pardon me. Everton versus West Brom.
Everton will win that.
Hull versus Swansea.
Swans. That's a massive game as well. We're right at the crunch of the season now. We're right at it. Hull City need to do something. They've gone a little bit downhill since they drew at Old Trafford against us in the league. It was like 1-1. Because they beat us the week before in the EFL second leg, but we we all know how that ended up. We've got the trophy in the cabinet. But, yeah, Hull haven't been very good since then. So they really need to turn it around because games are running out. Like, right. you got to start picking up the points now.
Are we 3/4 of the way through the season or just about to reach that point?
Pretty much. We're right at 3/4,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so the last game Sunday, Liverpool versus Burnley. Burnley. I don't know who Burnley are.
Honestly, based on what I saw yesterday, Liverpool should trounce them. But Liverpool do not do good against these type of teams.
But they're at home.
I'm going Burnley. 2-1.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What about you, Mark?
I kind of agree with Ryan. It's like, you know, I was at the bar the other day and all these Liverpool fans are giving me lip and I'm like, you know, you lost to Leicester on Monday, like, and 2017 hasn't been very good, so yeah, they seem to have problems with these smaller teams, and
I think it's an attitude thing.
That's going to be an even bigger problem this time of the season. You know, like we were talking about after last week's show, Tottenham's got a lot of games against relegation zone teams. Like, you better come to play when you're playing absolutely. Those teams
there's
this time
no
of year.
There's no walkover. There's a lot of money involved right now, and they're being told, hey, you will be surplus to requirements if we go down, so you better make sure we stay in this league.
Yeah.
And a lot of these clubs know they're leaving the party. It gets to that point, and it's like they're not just going to fold over. They're going to go out there for the fans and be like, hey, you know what? We beat Tottenham this year. You guys enjoy that? You know, like...
Yeah.
I'm going for a 1-1. I don't think it will be as bad as the losing to Burnley, but I think...
I don't think it will be a positive result. Well, I mean, I don't think it will be 3 points.
All right, guys, that's about it for this week. We'll be back next Sunday.
Thanks for listening. Champions League midweek.
Yeah, don't forget, Champions League midweek. All right, see you next week, guys.
You've been listening to Blokes on the Bench with your host, Andy Richardson, on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. Join us again next Sunday at 6 for another edition and feed us back at facebook.com/blokesonthebench.